All right, everybody, good morning, and welcome to Sunday School. Let's begin with prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for this time. Thank you we can open your word in freedom, we have been blessed to have a country where we can teach in your word, where we can open your word, where we can worship without fear of being arrested. We thank you for that freedom, and we pray for your persecuted church around the world, Lord. May you give them courage and strength. May they persevere through those difficulties. And we pray for a blessing on your word as it is opened this morning. May we listen well. May we learn from what you have to say to us. And may you show us how this applies in our lives, Lord, that we may love you with and by our obedience. We turn this over to you and ask for your help in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Well, if you were here last week I did part one of a series I'm doing on communication in Proverbs. Last week we focused on good communication, wise speech. This all comes out of my study that I'm doing for my Bible study on in lessons in Proverbs. And so this is part two of that study on communication. And this is sort of on the negative side of speech and communication. Last time we saw what wise speech was, we just briefly, the wise person knows what to say, he knows when to say it, and he knows how to say it in order to do the most good for other people. And so there was more of a focus on the positive. This week we'll focus on the negative part of it. And just before we begin, getting into sort of what bad communication looks like, that we want to see sort of what God feels about when we use our words poorly. And so if you could turn to chapter 6 of Proverbs, and we'll start with verse 12 and work our way down to verse 19. And I just want to go through this briefly. Just want to get a proper God's perspective on our words, on bad words. And there in chapter 6, verse 12, we have a description of the worthless person, the wicked person. It says there, a worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a perverse mouth, who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers, who with perversity in his heart continually devises evil, who spreads strife. Therefore his calamity will come suddenly. Instantly he will be broken and there will be no healing. Notice there you have the wicked person, worthless person, and the first kind of the wicked person is revealed by what he says. You see that he walks with a perverse, a false, a crooked mouth. His words reveal his heart. We saw that last time, how the heart is what it is revealed through our words. The heart informs our words. The heart instructs our words. And a wicked person is revealed in what he says. And notice verse 13. It says, who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers. And so what we're not just talking about verbal communication. We're actually talking about like body language here. Body language, which is used to communicate evil, sinful stuff. This is seen, Proverbs 16:30 says much the same thing. There it says, he who winks with his eyes does so to devise perverse things. He who compresses his lips brings evil to pass. And so a wicked person also uses his hands, his feet, his eyes, his whole body to sometimes communicate wickedness. And so that's just something to point out as well. Just because we don't say something doesn't mean we don't actually say something. And just to skip down to verse 15, it just mentions that his calamity will come suddenly, he will be broken, so God will punish such a person. And then verse 16, this is so where we're going here. There's six things which the Lord hates. Yes, seven which are an abomination to him. And you there list seven things which God hates. And when you see, the first one is haughty eyes, which is pride. And then you have a lying tongue, second on the list. And we'll just move down in verse. The last one, or the second last one, is a false witness who utters lies. And so in of the two of the seven things which God hates, two of those are dealing with lies. And the word abomination is a very strong word. It's an intense outrage. It's something detestable, something loathsome, something repulsive. God uses it to describe things like idolatry, homosexuality, sexual perversions, human sacrifice, forms of black magic, prostitution, sacrificing unclean animals. And so amidst those big sins that we all like condemn and we're all eager to cut down or to show that they're evil and protest them, among those kind of things that are considered an abomination, lying is considered an abomination by God. So God thinks of it very severely. It's a serious thing to God when we lie. And even when you look at the rest of the list, the things that are in there are not always quickly condemned by people. And yet God looks at them as something he hates, as an abomination, as an outrage. And just to continue with this theme of abomination, Proverbs 12, verse 22. There it says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal faithfully are his delight. And again, the same thing here is mentioned twice. And so I just, before we even begin, when we use our words poorly, it's a big deal in God's sight. It's something serious, a serious matter to God. And therefore, we need to take very careful attention to how we speak. And there's no such thing as little white lies to God. God condemns them all as an abomination to him. And it just shows how God is a God of truth and loves truth. And really, I guess that's when you look at this, the lesson today, all the bad forms of communication tend to be something, they're in the lie department. They're all connected. They all have some form of lie to them. And so God hates that. And so before we get into some of those things, another thing that we consider just briefly, the danger of foolish talk, the danger of foolish communication. And Proverbs 18, verse 6 and 7. There it says, a fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. And so often, when we use our words poorly, when we lie, when we do all the things that we're not supposed to do with them, it brings relational troubles, marriage troubles. We see trouble in families, troubles in the church. But there's more to this, the idea of there's legal troubles that can come. We can be sued. We can be brought to court. How often don't words bring fist fights, at least verbal fights as well? And when you think about all the things that our sinful words can bring in our lives, and how much conflict they can bring in our lives, you know, if we could just control our words and speak with wisdom, we would avoid a lot of difficulty and trouble in our lives. Verse 7 says, a fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul. And how true is that? How often don't people get ruined because of the things they say? And you can find many examples in the news about people who are ruined because they said something dumb and somebody... or they said something slanderous and they were ruined because of it. You can think of all the politicians whose past Facebook posts led to them being defrocked and removed from office. And so we saw just how, and then continue this theme, I guess, Proverbs 12, 18. It says there is a one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. And so we here have somebody who is who speaks rashly. He's reactionary in his words. He doesn't think before he speaks. He just speaks whatever on the top of his head, and his words are like swords. They cut, they hack, they hurt, they bring pain, they bring conflict. This person is a danger to society in a way. There's people like that that use their words and to hurt and to harm people. And behind them is a carnage of people that are wounded and live with pain because of those words that were said. The wise person, on the other hand, is a person who brings healing. One person hurts, the other person heals with his words. We saw this last time, so it's sort of just a reminder again. Another verse that I came across that I wanted to bring out. And so we're just reminded that there's a serious consequence when we use our words sinfully. And so the first way in which we can use our words poorly is in the area of flattery. The Proverbs have something to say about flattery. And so first maybe it'd be helpful to define flattery too, to think about what is it. Webster's Dictionary, the old one, says it is commendation bestowed for the purpose of gaining favor or influence. I made a definition. Flattery is to praise another for the purpose of fulfilling a selfish motive. And flattery is always, it's praise, but it could be true, it could be generally, sometimes it's false, often it's false. But whether it's true or false, flattery, it's a motive that comes up. So when somebody says something nice to you, the motive in their heart is evil. I mean, you could come up to somebody and say that they look wonderful, that they're just amazing, and you could see this on Facebook all the time. People post a picture of themselves, and it's like, wow, you look amazing. I just love how you look in that dress or that suit or whatever it may be, and it seems kind of no big deal. But the motive of their heart could be good, but it also could be that they just want that other person's approval. Like It could be as simple as that. You can just want their approval. You want them to like you. Flattery could be all sorts of different things, and we'll kind of look at that as we go here. What's interesting about flattery is that in Proverbs, the person who is seen to use flattery the most is the immoral woman. Now, just we'll flip through a couple passages here. So Proverbs 2:16. 2:16 says, it talks about how wisdom will guard you, and one of the things it does you is deliver you, verse 16, to deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words. Proverbs 5, verse 3, there it says, for the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech, but in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. There it doesn't say flattery, but the idea is the same thing. And Proverbs 6:24. There it says, to keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. And then chapter 7, verse 21. With her many persuasions, she entices him. With her flattering lips, she seduces him. And there we see flattery in four different passages where the immoral woman, the adulteress, the prostitute will flatter to get what she wants out of a man. And so what it does teach us is that flattery is often used in sexual morality, and we need to be aware of that and to guard ourselves against that. So Proverbs 26 and verse 28, although as I was looking at this passage, I also saw that the previous verses are important as well. And so we'll start with verse 23 of Proverbs 26, chapter 26. Like an earthen vessel overlaid with silver dross, are burning lips and a wicked heart. He who hates disguises it with his lips, but lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Through his hatred, he covers itself with guile. His wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. And here you see this whole passage is really dealing with flattery. It's compared to an earthen vessel, a clay pot. It's a cheap thing, but it would be overlaid with a silver dross, they would purify silver, they would take off the dross, the impurities, and it seems like they would be use those impurities then to paint that clay pot. And so the clay pot would look on to the outside as valuable, it looked like silver, but of course inside it's just a clay pot, it's just clay, it's not actually made of silver. And that's a good illustration for flattery, because flattery has the appearance of something good, something nice, something genuine, but really it's just inside it's worthless, because it comes from a wicked heart, a selfish heart. And so I just verse 28 is sort of the focus here. It says, a lying tongue hates those it crushes. A flattering mouth works ruin. There you can see the parallelism there. A lying tongue and flattery are connected. Usually, when a person flatters, they're lying. If they're not lying with their mouth in actually the content of what they say, they're lying because their heart isn't actually really meaning what they say. And the purpose of flattery is ruin. There's a contrast between what the words are and what the intention is. And so moving on to Proverbs 29:5. In Proverbs 29:5, we read of, it says there, a man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. This is the proverb that gave John Bunyan the inspiration in his Pilgrim's Progress to write about the flatterer. If you're familiar with that book, you'll know that Pilgrim and, Hopeful? They are led down the wrong path by the flatterer, and they get caught in a net. And that's where Pilgrim's Progress, or John Bunyan, got it from. But here you have a man who flatters his neighbor. It's a man who makes smooth, a man who is a smooth talker. A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net. Flattery is a trap that's designed to harm, a design to gain something from that person. And Proverbs 28:23 says there, he who rebukes a man will afterwards find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. Flattery may gain us initial favor. Flattery may... we may be sucked into it and may think that, wow, this is a great person and you're thankful for it. But afterwards, as time goes on, you'll see the hollowness of those words, and you'll see the evil intention of that person's heart, and that favor, that admiration for that person will be gone. And the contrast is somebody who rebukes a person. The idea seems to be rebuking a person from sin. If you rebuke somebody from sin, you'll find often that right away you will not have favor. A person will not appreciate being rebuked for their sin. They won't appreciate being corrected, and oftentimes the wise person will eventually see that the person who told him, gave him that rebuke, was right, and he'll appreciate that. It may take him a day, it may take him a week, it may take him 20 years, but eventually he may see that those words of rebuke were like the best thing he ever had. The contrast there is with flattery, which initially is appreciated, but as time goes on, it's nothing. It's the person may despise you and certainly not like you. And I was reading a blog or an article where a pastor was flattered of his great preaching, of his great church. And because of that, he let his guard down and let this person, he put this person into a ministry position quicker than normal. He didn't take the time to get to know them because the flattery made him think that this person was really good, that she was wonderful. And then eventually, it took some time, but there was sinful things that prompted that flattery, there were some sins that weren't addressed in that person's heart. And that person eventually left the church. And it was a good lesson for this pastor. And there you can see that it sometimes is just time that will reveal the flatterer. And how flattery is a dangerous thing for a person's life, just a person's life, but also in the life of this church. Flattery can do a lot of damage. And so I guess two things we need to think about is how can we avoid being a flatterer, and how can we avoid falling for flattery? I think it's helpful to see in the first part, how can we avoid being the flatterer? The root cause of flattery is really our selfishness. We use nice words because we want something out of that person. It could be just we want their approval, we want their kindness, we want their love or affection, and we can flatter them with words because we want that out of them. So it's really selfishness. It could be simply like that, or it can be worse. I mean, it can be more sinister than that, where you can flatter a person simply to you can flatter a person to gain to steal from them. You can flatter a person to try get sexual favors out of them. There's all sorts of things you can do with flattery, and it's a dangerous thing. And so we need to put to death self when it comes to flattery. If we want to stop being a flatterer, we need to use our words for the good of other people rather than for the good of ourselves. And we need to consider carefully our motives when we praise somebody, when we say something. We need to really mean what we say, and we really need to mean what we say for the good of the other person. And we need to also remember too that we have a very deceitful heart, and we need to be very honest with ourselves when we say things. So how do we avoid falling for flattery? Really, the reason why we fall for flattery is because we're proud. We like it. We like someone to come up to us and tell us we look great, and that our family's wonderful, and that we're great at our job, and there could be all sorts of ways people flatter us. But we're proud, and that pride that's within us, it grows when we have flattery. It sucks that in, and it doesn't have a guard, it just, like a sponge, enjoys the flattery. We may even think it's not true, but we still like it. And so if we want to avoid flattery completely, then really we need to cultivate humility in our lives. We need to live solely for the praise of God. We need to learn to seek to please Jesus Christ alone. You know, there was a couple times in Jesus' own ministry where he was flattered. And of course, on one hand, Jesus knows the hearts of people, so he knows their intentions were wrong. But because he was so committed to the Father's will and seeking the Father's pleasure, that flattery had nothing on him because he was not concerned what other people thought. And I think that's where we need to go. It just reminds me of an illustration that I heard somewhere where there was a musician who was playing before a big crowd, and he was, played really great, and everybody applauded him and wanted an encore and everything. But when he walked away, he was not happy. And when somebody asked him why he was not happy, he said, "Well, my master was not happy. His master that was teaching him was in the crowd, and he was not pleased because it wasn't as good as what his master had taught him." And so there is sort of what we want to be as people, as Christians. We don't want to have our eyes focused on what everybody's saying, on hearing their praises and commendations. We want to be focused on, is God pleased with me? People may look at you and go, "Well, I think you're great. You did a great job. You're wonderful." But they don't know your heart, and God does. And so when we need to be honest with ourselves and then have that total devotion to seeking God's pleasure, and knowing that even in our best works, God sees sin. So that's what Proverbs has to say about flattery. Now we'll move on to slander and gossip. Really, slander and gossip go together. And there are in Proverbs, there's two words that really have the meaning of slander and gossip, and we'll look at those as we go. But the first proverb we want to look at is Proverbs 10, verse 18. And there it says, "He who conceals hatred has lying lips, and he who spreads slander is a fool." So hatred could be expressed in really two ways. We could keep it in, we keep that hatred in our hearts, and conceal that hatred by lying. You know, we may not like a person, we hate a person, but somebody then comes up to us and asks us about that person, and we can say all sorts of things, nice things, to conceal that, or we could just keep our quiet and keep that hatred in. But eventually it'll come out in a lie. So one way we express hatred is by keeping it in, and then it comes out in lying. The other way we can deal with hatred in our heart is by slander. Instead of keeping it in, the idea is letting it out, spreading it out. And that's great foolishness. And so both of these are wrong ways to deal with hate. And you'll notice here that the root of slander and the root of gossip is hate. It's opposed to love. It's not loving to slander and gossip. It comes from a hatred of a person, and so it's a very serious thing. As opposed to how people often view gossip in the world. I mean, we watched this old I Love Lucy episode where the whole program was all about kind of, yeah, you know, gossip's not good, but let's have fun with it, and the whole thing was sort of making light of gossiping and slandering a person. They know it's wrong, but yeah, it's fun and we like it. So the world thinks light of gossip. In fact, I mean, most of what's on the internet and most of what's in the news is really just gossip and slander. So it's just commonplace. And so it's very countercultural for the Christian to give up slandering and gossiping. Proverbs 11, verse 13. That's where we're going to go next. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter. So the word talebearer here is a Hebrew word that is used a couple times here for a gossiper or a slanderer. It's somebody who maliciously uses privileged information to his advantage. The idea here, this word is sometimes used in the word of as a spy, where a person spies something out. Here the idea is about person spying out information, being privy to conversations, and his purpose is sort of to spread that information to other people. He learns about other people's secrets, their counsels, and he goes about spreading those around to other people. And that's contrast with a trustworthy person. A trustworthy person who conceals a matter. One person reveals it, the other one conceals it. So this word comes up again in Proverbs 20, verse 19. It has the first same line, if you'll notice. He goes about as a slanderer, that's the same word actually as the previous verse that we saw, reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip. Do not mix with a gossip. And so here we see that we're warned of having contact with such a person. And there's two reasons. The first reason why we shouldn't associate with a gossip is because it's sinful to want to hear gossip, and we should avoid hearing that gossip. And so being not part of a gossiper, not associating with them, we will not hear that gossip. The other reason why we shouldn't associate with a gossip is because a gossip can't be trusted. A slanderer can't be trusted. If they're going to reveal secrets about other people, when you leave that conversation and go on to someone, go on and your merry way, that person will reveal secrets about you. And so you just simply can't trust a gossip. And so in time, they will reveal all the secrets that you have confided to them. Proverbs 16:28, and here we're getting into a different word about gossip. It says, a perverse man spreads strife, and a slanderer separates intimate friends. So this word here, we'll see it come up a couple times. It's translated differently into the different verses here, but it's the same word. And it's a person who murmurs, a person who whispers about others behind their back. There's a criticism. There's a criticism there, a complaining, a whispering. There's a secrecy involving how they're doing behind the person's back. When they're not there, it's a damaging another person's reputation. Somebody compared this to peddling and danger or damaging news, like you know how a peddler would go around selling his wares. There's people that go around selling, as it were, all the bad stories that they hear from about other people, and that's the kind of idea of this person here. And so you see here, a perverse man spreads strife. That's a person who's, a perverse man is one who is turning away from what's normal, what's right. He turns things upside down by his words. He creates conflict wherever he goes. That person is compared with, in a similar way to a slanderer who separates intimate friends. A perverse person and a slanderer both destroy relationships. A person who is a gossip, a slanderer, will eventually find he has no friends because he's separated them all from himself by telling all their secrets. They're mad at him. They won't talk to him or her. And then he'll find that nobody is really his true friend because he doesn't. That person reveals their secrets. But you could also have where, on the other hand, where you have two friends over here, and then you have your gossip over here. He hears something about this person, and he tells it, and that information that he has leaked to other people leads to that friendship being destroyed. And so you have a gossip ruining his own life, and he ruins the lives of many people all around him. The next proverb we're going to look at is Proverbs 18, verse 8. Now, this is an important one. It's actually repeated twice in Proverbs, exact same words in both Proverbs. So Proverbs 18, 8, and then Proverbs 26, 20, verse 22 are exactly the same. Now, when the Bible repeats something, it means it's important. And that Solomon decided that both of these Proverbs, exactly the same, should be repeated, shows that this is something that was important that needed to be said twice. And there we read, the words of a whisperer, same word as the previous verse there, a slanderer, are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. So they were told that the words of a whisperer, the gossip itself, is like a dainty morsel. It's something that the idea there is of something that's tasty, something that's delicious, some food that is difficult to resist. It's like you're at a party where there's a platter of all sorts of delicacies and it gets passed around and it's difficult not to take something off the plate because your mouth waters and you want it. Well, gossip does that to us. It's hard to resist. Our sinful nature loves to suck it in, to hear. But we're warned in the next verse, line 2, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. Literally, that's the chambers of the belly. Gossip, food goes down into the stomach, into the body, but gossip, in a way, goes down into the inner person. No, we're not talking about just like food goes down into our physical bodies and spreads out throughout the body. Gossip goes into the soul of a person, to the mind, to the heart, to all aspects of his inner person. It permeates into that. And it becomes settled in there. It becomes, it permanently affects the inner person the inner person. Gossip influences how we think about a person. Gossip distorts. It warps how we view that person. You hear something bad. It could be true, but it could be false. And forever you look at that person in light of the gossip you heard, and you're not able to know whether that person is, whether that was true. You see that person in a whole different light for a long time. I could think of people in my life where people said things about them, and for years, that's how I viewed them. You look through them through that. Gossip becomes like a colored lens in which you see that person, and it took years before that lens was put to the clear one so you can actually get a correct view of that person. Really, it poisons our hearts towards a person. And I think that just shows the danger of gossip. It's on one hand, it's delightful to us, but on the other hand, it's dangerous to so many people around us and to ourselves as well. And so this is a warning of the subtle dangers of gossip. You see, gossip is, it's like a decadent brownie, but it's laced with poison, right? We eat it, but it kills us inside. Let me see here. So the next one we want to look at, there's two here, and they both have a similar idea. Proverbs 26, verse 20. There it says, for lack of wood, the fire goes out, And where there's no whisperer, contention quiets down. So, pretty basic, this is cause and effect. When you have wood, you put wood on a fire, the fire grows and grows, right? More wood you put on, you get bigger and bigger fire. When you take off the wood, when you stop putting wood on, the fire goes out. The same is true with gossip and slander. You have a relationship, you've put on gossip, as it were, you start to add more gossip, more slander, and conflicts, strife, fuel up. And now you've got great conflicts everywhere. Now you remove conflict, you remove slander, sorry, you remove gossip and slander, and conflicts die out because there's nothing to fuel them. And so, and the next one that has the same idea there is Proverbs 25:23. The north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue and angry countenance. Backbiting tongue is a tongue of secrecy. It's the same idea as the gossip. And there's cause and effect here again. The north wind brings rain. When you see the north wind coming, you know rain is coming. And here the idea is when you have a gossiper, a slanderer, when you see such a person, you can, if you were a betting person, which you shouldn't be, you could place money on that conflict is going to come, and you would probably be rich. But anyways, but the purpose is here is to just remind you that conflict will always, will always produce conflict and anger, especially when your secrets are revealed, people will be angry. When you hear about what someone said about you, yes, you will be angry. And so, as we did with flattery, we want to just kind of look at this a little bit. You know, when we really gossip and listening to gossip all flows out of a lack of love for that person. And so when it comes to a person who is a gossip or a person who likes to listen to gossip, the same cure is really to be applied, and that is to ask God to help you to love people more. Because when you love people, when you truly care about their souls, when you truly care about what's best for them, you won't gossip. And you won't listen to gossip. You'll be able to resist it. Your flesh loves gossip, but when you put it to death and when you put on love towards other people, you will. You'll be able to resist it. Also, gossip sort of feeds a self-righteousness, a pride. As we want to listen to other people's faults, their sins. It gives us a sense of, I'm better than that. I don't do those kind of things, or it kind of reminds us, hey, we're not as, they're bad too, and I'm okay to be bad, and it sort of, it fuels our pride, it feeds self-righteousness, and so walking in humility again, and in the grace of the gospel will help us to keep from gossiping. And that's all done there. So we're going to look at the next thing that Proverbs talks about is quarreling. Proverbs 17, verse 14 says, "The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so abandon the quarrel before it breaks out." Beginning a strife is like letting out water. Well, the illustration here that I have in my mind when I see a passage like this is of Jan and the dike. There's a story in Holland of, Holland is a country that's being reclaimed from the sea by building dikes and reclaiming the land and using it. And so Holland is filled with dikes. And of course, if a dike breaks, the water from the sea rushes in and destroys houses and farms and ruins everything. And so there was the story of this little boy, Yun, and he's walking alongside the road, and he sees a little hole in the dike where there's some water is trickling out, and he tries to plug the hole with some sticks or with some rocks, and nothing seemed to work. So he puts his finger in the hole to stop the flow of water, and that stopped it. But he knew if he moved, that it would keep going, and if he couldn't get help fast enough, by the time he got help, the dike would have broken already. The little hole would have continually got bigger and eventually broke the dike. And so the boy, Yun, he stood by his post with his finger in the hole all night. And in the morning, when he was cold and tired, the milkman apparently came by and saw what was going on and gathered all the men, and they fixed the dike. And of course, he's the hero of the story. He's the hero of the country, because he saved the land from being devastated. So the idea here is the same idea, similar, where strife, conflict begins small, but as people feed it and as people let it continue to go, go on with conflict, it gets bigger and bigger, and the destruction it causes becomes more severe, more on greater scale, and then you have a devastation all around. Your relationships are laid waste. You know, it could just start with an angry look or a careless word or a harsh reply, even just the tone of your voice to set off a conflict, and then at that point the other person has a choice. Do you respond in kind? Do you return the slap with a slap, with the harsh word with a harsh word, or do you just walk away from the conflict? Do you speak with love? You know, what was last time? A gentle answer turns away wrath. And so a person, you can have a harsh answer and you could put out that conflict just by a gentle response. So the lesson for us there is abandon the quarrel before it breaks out. So avoid conflict if possible. And don't let it go any further. Turn the other cheek and don't return anger with anger. And doing such is honorable. You know, in the world, it seems that defending your reputation, defending your pride, is an honor. It's sort of a thing that everybody is supposed to do, and it's commended. But the Bible commends somebody who avoids conflict. Not all conflict is possible to avoid, but when we can avoid it, we should. And Proverbs 20, verse 3 says this, "Keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel." Any fool will quarrel. The idea seems to be like a dog baring its teeth about to plunge into you, to attack you. So any fool will quarrel. It's just normal for us to do that. But it's honorable for us to restrain ourselves, restrain our anger, restrain our impulse to defend our reputation, to show that we're right. And so even if people think we're wrong, we should try to avoid we have honor in avoiding a conflict. And so we should learn to put to death self and by not always trying to defend ourselves and just overlooking personal offenses. Proverbs 22, verse 10 deals with how to deal with a person who is given to quarrelsome. And there it says, "Drive out the scoffer and contention will go out. Even strife and dishonor will cease." A scoffer, someone who's hardened, who's set in his ways. He's rebellious, he's foolish. We're told to remove him from God's people, exile them. You know, there's churches that have conflict all the time. And sometimes the reason they have conflict is simply because they don't obey things like this. This is really connected to church discipline as well, where a person, you know, they don't exercise church discipline, and so they allow people who are contentious, who are people given to quarrelsomeness, who continue to bring about conflict and strife, they allow them to continue, and it just spreads and it wreaks havoc in churches. Well, here this is for, in Israel here, we're talking about driving that person out, removing them from the people of God. And when you do so, even strife and shame will cease. Contention will go out. You remove that person, and suddenly there's peace. That's quiet. There's quiet. The strife is gone again. The conflicts are gone. And even shame is gone. Dishonor. You know, it's a dishonor for a church when there's conflict, and it's a shame on God's people to see them fighting like that. And so when we remove that person, we also remove the shame from among God's people. So we'll see how far we go with this, but we're going to deal with a little bit of lying here. And Proverbs 14:25 says, "A truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous." He is a deceiver. And we see how it just reminded that this is sort of the imagery of a court. The court justice here. Truth is really the foundation for justice, and hence it's important for us to tell the truth. If people won't tell the truth in the justice system, there really can be no justice, and all you have is injustice. When you think about if people are always lying in court, a lot of people, innocent people, will be sentenced to death or to be put in prison or to be punished. And so we see the importance of telling the truth. A truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous. So lies really are dangerous. They're deceitful. They destroy lives, their reputations, relationships, even one's very life. You know, this is sort of, you remember the story with David. David is fleeing from Saul, and he goes with his men to the town of Nob. And there he didn't take a sword. In his haste, he didn't have any food, so he's desperately hungry. And so the priest comes to him, and he asks him for the showbread, the bread of the presence. And the priest asks him about what he's doing, and David lies. It's a small lie, in a sense. But it's a lie nevertheless. David lies, and the priest helps him, gives him the food, gives him a sword, and David goes his way. Well, a couple years later, at least I think, not sure the timeline, but anyway, some time goes by, and Saul hears from one of his sheep herders, from Doeg the Edomite, about how the priests of Nob helped David. And so Saul goes there and, with the help of Doeg, murders all the priests and raises the town to the ground. And so what I wanted, that story from David's life shows that one little lie led to the destruction of a town. If David would have told the truth, he could have avoided a lot of that. And So we need to be careful with our lies, or not careful with our lies. We need to avoid lying for sure. Proverbs 25 verse 18 says, "Like a club and a sword and a sharp arrow is a man who bears false witness against his neighbor." And here, a person who lies about his neighbor is compared to a club, to a sword, to a sharp arrow. Such a person, when he lies, is dangerous as weapons. Those weapons are meant to kill, they're meant to maim, to destroy, And that's what lies do to people. You can destroy a person's reputation by one simple lie. You can get a person fired by lying about them. You can destroy his family by lying. You can lie about elders and pastors and destroy churches by simply lying. And it doesn't take much. In fact, Proverbs 19:5 talk about the certainty of God's judgment on those who lie. There it says, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. And here God promises that those who lie will indeed be punished. And this is also repeated again in Proverbs 19, verse 9, same chapter, where it talks about a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will perish. And this is sort of a warning and a comfort in a sense. And it's a warning that God knows when you're lying, and that God hates your lies, and that God will certainly punish you for your lies. On the other hand, it's a comfort because if we've been hurt by people's lies, we can be sure that God will set things right in his time. God will defend our reputation. He will deal with the situation in his own way, in his own time, and we can be at peace and not take revenge. In fact, it's so important to tell the truth that it's better to tell the truth and become poor than to lie and become rich. This is seen in two Proverbs here, actually same chapter, Proverbs 19. Proverbs 19 verse 22 is the one I had kind of worked on, studied. It says, what is desirable in a man is his kindness, and is better to be a poor man than a liar. So the word kindness there is the word for covenant love, faithfulness, being a loyalty to a person. So the kind of the idea seems to be here is a person could lie and gain maybe riches. He could, by his lies, gain that kind of riches, but also maybe betray a friend or something by doing so. Maybe even a simple lie, and it may be tempted to do that simple thing, to lie, to gain some riches or wealth. But Proverbs teaches us it's better to tell the truth, to be faithful, and become poor than to lie and become rich. This is seen, it's probably a better verse to see this, but Proverbs 19 verse 1 says, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in his speech and is a fool. So here's another one of those better than Proverbs that are seen throughout this book. So it's better to be a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. So when you compare those two lines, the picture emerges of, again, of somebody who by lying, by sinning in his words, he can gain wealth and prominence and position maybe, as opposed to a person who's poor because he walks in integrity, he walks in truthfulness. So just a reminder too that while Proverbs talks a lot about the benefits that will come to the righteous person, people can take those out of context and say that if we walk in wisdom, we'll become wealthy and rich and famous. Proverbs also shows us that sometimes by telling the truth, we may become poor. And so both those things need to be, both those things are true, and they're both part of life. We'll leave it there, I think. I think when you after those Proverbs, just want to remind us again that there's no small white lies. All lying is hated by God, it has terrible consequences, and God will punish liars. I believe in Revelation, it even lists, in the list of those who will be in the lake of fire, it just talks about those who are liars. Of all the sins that are picked out there, and some of them are pretty disturbing ones, lying is placed in there. And we need to be people of the truth. And if anything comes out of this, what we need to be is people committed to truth, both in our in what we say and in the truthfulness from our own heart, sincerity, with love. Love and truth need to go together. And that's really, when you look at all these things together, that's what binds them together. A truthfulness in our speech and a love in our speech. And when we do that, God will be pleased and God will be glorified. Well, I'm going to pray, and then if you have questions, you can come up to me and ask. So, Father in heaven, as we end this lesson, we ask that you would forgive us, because, Lord, when we can consider the words we speak, we see that so often they're not motivated by love. They're often not truthful. And help us, Lord, to see that, where we fail, where we can improve, Lord, and change us, Lord. Help us to love you, first of all, to love other people deeply, to care about them. Help us, Lord, to speak truthfulness, even if it hurts us, even if it means we are poor. We pray, Father, that you would empower us to be able to use our speech to help others and to glorify you and to do what's right and good in this world, Lord. Thank you for this lesson, Lord. May you bring it to our hearts and keep it there, and may it be a reminder throughout our day and throughout the week and months that we are to be people who walk in truth and love. Thank you for our time, and may you bless it through our Savior Jesus Christ. Amen.